So how are all you immortal beings tonight? This evening we've come to the section, we're coming now to section 6, Condition of the Departed. Now some of this we've looked at previously, but not the first part of it. And so we'll be looking at that tonight. Individuality retained and the exalted station of true believers. Matters related to the soul in the other world. Start off with an interesting oral statement from Abdu'l-Bahá from notes taken in about 1900. So just remember, this is pilgrim notes. The first and most important matter today for everyone is to know and accept the manifestation and to give knowledge of him to others. There are many spiritual conditions in this world and many different conditions in the unseen world. Those who hear and cannot accept the manifestation, their good deeds will be counted. But no one enters the kingdom of Baha unless he accepts the truth. Those who do not hear, their good deeds will be counted. They will have a certain spiritual condition, but not. Those who accept the truth will have a very high position. At present, the believers must have faith as the disciples of Christ had. In the future, this truth will have been proved, and people will be born into it, as we were born into Christianity. All persons should at all times search for the truth of God, and they who do this will find the present manifestation, for God is just, and has promised, "Seek, and ye shall find." And the lights abound even now. We must accept and obey. We cannot obey and not accept, as we cannot accept and not obey. A lighted lantern shows forth its light. If the lantern does not, you may be sure it is an unlighted lantern. This is part of a tablet of Abdu'l-Bahá, and it refers to biblical references, which I'm sorry I don't have here, but I think within the context of the quotation, you'll understand what's going on. He says, as to the difference and distinction between Lazarus and that rich man, the first was spiritual, while the second was material. One was in the highest degree of knowledge, and the other in the lowest depths of ignorance. The difference and distinction will naturally become realized between all men after their departure from this mortal world. But this distinction is not in respect to place. It is in respect to the soul and conscience. For the kingdom of God is sanctified from time and place. It is another world and another universe. The holy souls are promised the gift of intercession. This is also some notes of one of the early believers, Miss Rosenberg. Some of these have been cited in the New Era. Ethel Rosenberg was one of the early British believers. We know, this is from notes taken from Abdu'l-Bahá's talks, we know that the body or form has nothing to do with spirit or spiritual conditions. When the spirit is disconnected from or leaves the body, there is no reason for thinking it can be reabsorbed or joined with the whole of spirit, as the drops of water are absorbed or lost in the sea. The earth is one unit, yet how many beings and separate parts it contains. The body of man is one unit, yet it has an infinite number of separate and individual parts that compose it, such as eyes, fingers, so forth. So in like manner, spirit is one, but consisting of many differentiated parts. I have the same quotation from three different sources, not skipping them. In a tablet published in Star of the West, Abdu'l-Bahá says, "You will retain your individuality and will not be swallowed up in one vast spirit." For many people that thought, well, in this life we have an individual life, and when we go to the other world, we came from there, we didn't have any consciousness when we came. When we go back, we'll also lose our consciousness. We'll be part of the great wholeness of God's spirit or something. But this is not the case. We're going to retain individual centers of consciousness in the next world. And these quotations are aimed at making that clear. Also, this is from a tablet of Abdu'l-Bahá to Mrs. Brittingham, one of the early American believers. He said, "Know thou that sex, male or female, relates to the exigencies of the physical world and has no relation or connection with the spirits. The spirit and its worlds are purified from these conditions and sanctified from all similitude to the bodies in the contingent world." And from a letter written through his secretary, Shoghi Effendi said, "Man's identity, or rather his individuality, is never lost. His reality as a person remains intact throughout the various stages of his development. He does not pre-exist in any form before coming to this world." Another letter written on the Guardian's behalf, he says, "You have asked as to what point in man's evolution he becomes conscious of self. This consciousness of self in man is a gradual process and does not start at a definite point. It grows in him in this world and continues to do so in the future spiritual world. Man can certainly recall past experiences in his evolution, and even when his soul leaves this world, it will still remember the past." Regarding your question concerning the possibility of the soul losing its identity, the teachings are quite clear concerning the fact that the human soul never loses its identity. On to section 6.2 now. These are various extracts from different tablets, some of which you'll be familiar with because they're from the gleanings. This one's from the Kitab-i Aqdas, referring to the king, one of the promised kings that's to rule in Persia. "Such a king is numbered with the companions of the Crimson Ark, the ark which God hath prepared for the people of Baha." And you see this, you find this reference to Crimson Ark in different places. And this is a confirmatory verse in the Kitab-i Aqdas, which indicates that this is an ark which God has prepared for the Baha'is. Whatever that means in terms of the other world, we don't know, but there's some further references to that on in the other quotations. In one of the prayers and meditations, Baha'u'llah reveals the following: "Glorified art thou, O Lord my God. Thou hast in thine all-highest paradise assigned unto thy servants such stations that if any one of them were to be unveil to men's eyes, all who are in heaven and all who are on earth would be dumbfounded. By thy might, were kings to witness so great a glory, they would assuredly rid themselves of their dominions and cleave to such of their subjects as have entered beneath the shadow of thine immeasurable mercy and sought the shelter of thine all-glorious name." Having referred to the blessings conferred on all creation, being an emanation from God, being the mirror and reflection of his will and purpose, Baha'u'llah reveals the following. He says, "If such be the blessings conferred on all created things, how superior must be the destiny of the true believer, whose existence and life are to be regarded as the generating purpose of all creation. Just as the conception of faith hath existed from the beginning and hath no beginning, and will endure to the end that hath no end, in like manner will the true believer eternally live and endure. His Spirit will everlastingly circle round the will of God. He will last as long as God Himself will last. He is revealed through the revelation of God and is hidden at His bidding. It is evident that the loftiest mansions in the realm of immortality have been ordained as the habitation of them that have truly believed in God and in His signs. Death can never invade that holy seat. Are there still chairs in the back? There are chairs up in the front along the side here if you want to pass some chairs back. I think we're all right still. Okay. That last quotation was from the Gleanings, page 141. And the one about the stations that God has created in His all highest paradise is Prayers and Meditations, section 123, if you want to take note of that. Referring to the soul and when it leaveth the body, Baha'u'llah says, it will evince such ascendancy and reveal such influence as no force on earth can equal. Every pure, every refined and sanctified soul will be endowed with tremendous power and shall rejoice with exceeding gladness. So Gleanings 154. And now, concerning thy question regarding the soul of man and its survival after death, know thou of a truth that the soul, after its separation from the body, will continue to progress until it attaineth the presence of God in a state and condition which neither the revolution of ages and centuries nor the changes and chances of this world can alter. Now you recall that we read in a previous class that the meaning of attaining to the presence of God is attaining to the presence of the manifestation of God. And you should bear in mind that meaning is implicit also in this passage, that God, the essence, the all-encompassing, completely unknowable, unapproachable, entirely beyond the possibility of the human soul to conceive of Him, is always remote, but yet is always present through the presence of the manifestations of God. In other words, they are the mirror of His self in the realms of creation. And we should realize that these spiritual realms to which the souls, human souls, pass after death are also created realms. They're not the permanent world of God, although they also partake of His eternity, and it's called the eternal world. And in a sense, the universe, we're told, is also eternal, although we realize that everything is in flux here, composing and decomposing and in constant motion. Yes, yes. Yes, surely. And the souls of the manifestations that have lived here before will be there, and we will have the opportunity to meet them, to know them, we're told. We will be gathered into the presence of the prophets of God. But now, how this relates to the creatures on other planets and the manifestations that have appeared to them and all this endless universe, we don't know. Maybe we'll be in our own private little section for a while, you know. Earthling's paradise.
Well, I was thinking whether we have to recognize the manifestation
of some from what I can make out of the writings and everything, the appearance of the manifestations in the other world is not something open to doubt. You'll clearly understand who a manifestation of God is, if you have any soul to perceive at all. And but then we have that problem here, don't we? But I think that there we will rejoice in their presence, attain to their court, and there they are. Their sovereignty is fully revealed, rather than here it's veiled and a matter of testing people and so on, you know, the whole proving the sincere from the false-hearted. So some of those elements, that those tests of God, Abdu'l Bahá tells us, are limited to this world, and they're not part of the other world, that particular kind of test. Did you want to add something? We have this extract from a tablet to Abdul Wahhab. It's a famous, Lohe Abdul Wahhab is a famous a tablet of Baha'u'llah about the next world and the life of the soul in that world. And some passages from it are cited in the gleanings. This is one of them. The nature of the soul after death can never be described, nor is it meet and permissible to reveal its whole character to the eyes of men. The prophets and messengers of God have been sent down for the sole purpose of guiding mankind. I've got something missing here. Does anyone have the gleanings with them? Paste up has a missing couple of lines. Just a minute. You've got it in the long one? I don't know if I can find it there. No, I don't. I don't even know the page number. Do you have the corresponding page list? 156. So, talk to me afterwards, because there is a key between these two books that's been prepared by some believers. It is available. It's useful to have. Well, we'll skip that part. It will manifest the signs of God and His attributes, and will reveal His loving kindness and bounty. The movement of my pen is stilled when it attempteth to befittingly describe the loftiness and glory of so exalted a station. The honor with which the hand of mercy will invest the soul is such as no tongue can adequately reveal, nor any other earthly agency describe. Blessed is the soul which at the hour of its separation from the body is sanctified from the vain imaginings of the peoples of the world. Such a soul liveth and moveth in accordance with the will of its Creator and entereth the all-highest paradise. The maids of heaven, inmates of the loftiest mansions, will circle around it, and the prophets of God and His chosen ones will seek its companionship. With them that soul will freely converse, and will recount unto them that which it hath been made to endure in the path of God, the Lord of all worlds. If any man be told that which hath been ordained for such a soul in the worlds of God, the Lord of the throne on high and of earth below, his whole being will instantly blaze out in his great longing to attain that most exalted, that sanctified and resplendent station. Now it says that he's going to recount, the soul is going to recount that which it hath been made to endure in the path of God. Now if you haven't suffered in the path of God, you may not have much to talk about, you know, so you have to bear in mind that these things that you're collecting now, your sufferings and so on, would be those moments that you would like to exert yourself and demand proper attention and service and justice from everybody else around you. When you swallow those things, when you endure them, it adds to your strength. Now, we don't like to think about these days. We like to demand our rights, and we're very keen on rights. We can busily demand the rights of others, but we should be careful about demanding our own rights too much. It has a spiritual effect on us, I think. Yes, the part that is here, anyway, is from page 156 and 157 of Gleaning. And again, thou hast, moreover, asked me concerning the state of the soul after its separation from the body. Know thou of a truth that if the soul of man hath walked in the ways of God, it will assuredly return and be gathered to the glory of the Beloved. By the righteousness of God, it shall attain a station such as no pen can depict or tongue describe. The souls of the people of Baha who have entered and been established within the Crimson Ark shall associate and commune intimately one with another, and shall be so closely associated in their lives, their aspirations, their aims and strivings, as to be even as one soul. Now, this is, of course, we're longing that that kind of spiritual unity should manifest itself in this world. This is a quality of the other world. This is something that by degrees should appear within the Baha'i society, within the kingdom of God on earth, and that is this closeness of identity in our lives, our aspirations, our aims, and our strivings. Be ye even as one soul, Paola says in another passage. Ye are as one soul in many bodies. Another thing he says. Now, if each of us is conforming our life and our aspirations and our purposes to the will and intention of God, if we're able to find that and to become the expression of that purpose, to resonate with that flow of grace which God has destined for us, then our relationship to each other will acquire degrees of perfection that we're not presently aware of. And the interaction between the souls will release new and unforeseen, unsuspected depths of experience and of inspiration. And this, out of this will come the great progress of human society, both in the arts and in the sciences and just in pure and sheer, the sheer pleasure of fellowship that the souls will experience. Abdu'l-Bahá says that when two illumined souls or sanctified souls approach each other, then the interaction between them, it's as if the light of the mirrors of their hearts reflected on each other, and it compounds the light. And he uses this same expression, that this becomes light upon light. And the glory and the unity and the illumination which is promised for the Baha'i community in the future will surely have something, I think, to do with these qualities and the expression of these truths. And finally, in another tablet, Baha'u'llah says, as to those that have tasted of the fruit of man's earthly existence, which is the recognition of the one true God, exalted be his glory, their life hereafter is such as we are unable to describe. The knowledge thereof is with God alone, the Lord of all worlds. You know, this is a beautiful passage also from Baha'u'llah. He said, blessed are the people of Baha. God beareth me witness. They are the solace of the eye of creation. Through them the universes have been adorned and the preserved tablet embellished. They are the ones who have sailed on the ark of complete independence with their eyes set towards the dayspring of beauty. How great is their blessedness that they have attained unto what their Lord, the Omniscient, the All-Wise, hath willed. Through their light the heavens have been adorned, and the faces of those that have drawn nigh unto him made to shine. Baha'u'llah tells us in other places that a new race of men will be raised up in this dispensation. And when the pilgrims asked Shoghi Effendi about this on different occasions, he is said to have commented that new race of men exists now, and that each one of the Baha'is can be a part, not is, but can be a part of that new race of men. but that they will have to strive very hard to be part of it. That the realization of this goal centers on one's submission to the will of God, that is, conforming one's own will to the divine will and purpose. And that through that, and this is, he says, is that which characterizes this new race of men, through that one can become a part of this new race of men, even now. The requirements are the same requirements as for sainthood, basically. This passage we just read, it again stresses this. How great is the blessedness that they have attained unto what their Lord hath willed. We're speaking about how true happiness, the only true happiness that a human being can attain to, is attaining to the gifts which God has placed in the soul for serving, for it to be able to serve God, for it to be able to respond to God. And when the soul finds out how to do that, that's the source of everlasting joy, and of lasting joy, not the temporal joys sometimes we can experience here. More about the true believer, this beautiful passage that you'll recall, no doubt have seen. He says, by the sorrows which afflict the beauty of the all-glorious, such is the station ordained for the true believer, that if to an extent smaller than a needle's eye the glory of that station were to be unveiled to mankind, every beholder would be consumed away in his longing to attain it. For this reason it hath been decreed that in this earthly life the full measure of the glory of his own station should remain concealed from the eyes of such a believer. The Bab, in referring to one of the friends, said, having attained the good pleasure of God, he repaired to his habitation in the all-highest paradise. He also refers to the ineffable delights of the world, of the life to come. The ineffable delights of the life to come. Do you remember what ineffable means? Unable to be expressed in words. Unutterable. Ineffable. Everlasting reunion with God in the paradise of his good pleasure, nigh unto the seat of holiness. This is the Bab's promise for the soul. And there's a little picture of the other world. It's amazing. Verse revealed by the Bab. He says, indeed, God hath created everywhere around this gate oceans of divine elixir, tinged crimson with the essence of existence, and vitalized through the animating power of the desired fruit. And for them God hath provided arks of ruby, tender, crimson-colored, wherein none shall sail but the people of Baha, by the leave of God, the most exalted. What he's referring to, we don't know. That's from Selections of the Writings of the Bab, page 57. And this is from the Qayyum al-Asma. We've had quotations from Baha'u'llah on this subject, and now we're coming to the Bab, and we have some from the Master. Whenever the faithful hear the verses of this book being recited, their eyes will overflow with tears, and their hearts will be deeply touched by him who is the most great remembrance for the love they cherish for God, the All-Praised. He is God, the All-Knowing, the Eternal. They are indeed the inmates of the All-Highest Paradise, wherein they will abide forever. Verily they will see not therein save that which hath proceeded from God, nothing that will lie beyond the compass of their understanding. There they will meet the believers in paradise, who will address them with the words, peace, peace, lingering on their lips. S- again from the Bab, and this is also from the Qayyum al-Asma. Seek ye grace from God, for God hath ordained for you, after ye have believed in Him, a garden, the vastness of which is as the vastness of the whole of Paradise. Therein ye shall find not save the gifts and favors which the Almighty hath graciously bestowed by virtue of this momentous cause, as decreed in the Mother Book. Abdu'l-Bahá now, from a tablet, he says, if only thou couldst know what a high station is destined for those souls who are severed from the world, are powerfully attracted to the faith, and are teaching under the sheltering shadow of Baha'u'llah. How thou wouldst rejoice, how thou wouldst in exultation and rapture spread thy wings and soar heavenward for being a follower of such a way and a traveler towards such a kingdom. Selections from the Writings of Abdu'l-Bahá, page 100. Another tablet of the Master, he says, when the souls of the sincere depart from this body, then their unreal vision is changed into a vision of reality. Even as man, when in the age of babyhood and imperfection, though he seeth things, yet that vision is superficial and external. But when he reacheth the world or the age of perfection and becometh endowed with reasoning faculty and the power of discrimination and comprehension, then that vision of his is a vision of reality and not the unreality. And so Abdu'l-Bahá likens these two stages of vision in childhood and in maturity to the difference between vision in this world and the vision in the world to come. Again, he says, the earthly abode is not worth the attachment of the heart, for this structure will surely be destroyed, but that which is of worth to the freed ones, in other words, those detached from all save God, is the heavenly palace and the court of divine majesty. Thanks be to God that for each one of the divine freed slaves and the heavenly and dear maidservants, an indestructible mansion will be erected in the new kingdom. This mansion will be an everlasting dwelling, an eternal abode and shelter. Well, that's interesting. So you've got a house over there waiting for you, if ye be of the freed ones. An indestructible mansion will be erected in the new kingdom. I don't know what we can consult about these subjects, you know, I'm not having had a lot of experience firsthand insight into these questions. We can rehearse them, please. What might it be? No, because these are destructible, aren't they? Well, we have a question. Do you have an answer, please? Please. Yes, this is quite has the earmarks of all the near death or these experiences of people who in operations or in accidents have somehow been abstracted from their bodies and watched events and recounted afterwards what they've done. Some of them seem to have gone farther and started down moving towards the other world and been told that it wasn't time yet and they had to come back. But anyone that's had that experience, they've noticed in interviewing people who've had experiences like that, their attitude towards life is very different after that, because they realize how temporary it is, and the whole question of the fear of death is gone from them. They're so sure of the existence of the next life and of the beauty and the feeling that they had even just for a few moments there. But as Baha'u'llah says, if he took us there, we wouldn't want to come back at all. And please. We're going to come to a section here which has a number of letters and tablets about that, rather than trying to precede that. I mean, there are some teachings given in the writings about this. It relates, on the one hand, to those souls who have heard and rejected the faith, and on the other, to those who haven't yet had the opportunity to hear. There are different outcomes for different circumstances. So we've got two questions here. What about this mansion? If anyone has any thoughts about that, please. Anyone know something from the teachings about this other question? What happens to other souls? Some of that is covered in quotations, but not in great detail. And it's not the kind of thing that your friends who are not Baha'is are going to want to hear. It's quite direct that in this day, the proof of any kind of faith or spirituality is your recognition of the manifestation for the time you live in. And if you don't recognize that, if you have no capacity to recognize that, then one is tempted to think that the level of your spirituality is not of the nature that it should be. Maybe it's the appreciation that one seeks from others by being good and living a good life and feeling within a movement. But we see manifestations of some levels of understanding in various groups and past religions. Abdu'l Baha says, for the most part, it's become imitation, that the religions of the past have lost that full body of spirit that they had at the beginning. There may be traces of it, but these are very ephemeral compared to what those religions were in the early days of their development. When you think some of the people are living 3-4 manifestations behind still. Some of our neighbors actually here. But on the other hand, they are enjoying the benefits to some degree of what happens in the world through the coming of the manifestations and the progress of mankind. Yes, there's some quotations about that too, that they'll have an opportunity to recognize in the next life. And even if one has rejected here, but perhaps it's rejected because our face was so dark when we told them about it that they weren't moved by it. You know, we don't know did they really get the message or not, you know? I know one person that told me, I told you about the faith several years before you heard of it. I can't for the life of me remember that they said anything but some dogmatic statement about, but the soul of man is this. And I thought to myself, how do they know what the soul of man is? You know, they didn't say where it was from. They didn't say the name of the faith or anything. And yet they found me unreceptive, you know. So later on... So we may think that the people that turn away from the faith because of us are really just turning away from us and not from the faith. We should, and maybe that's why Baha'u'llah says, pray for them. If you're talking with them and they start arguing with you and they don't accept what you're saying, pray for them. Don't fight with them, just pray for them. Maybe that will make us able to better teach them the next time. Please. Well, that would be a poor choice of words, perhaps. They didn't recognize, or they didn't, at that time, didn't have the condition, the prerequisite condition. They all have the capacity, but whether, you know, we're in different states of receptivity. But I think, I mean, if we say we are, I feel that I'm among the saved in my religion, and then they hear the message of Baha'u'llah and they don't respond to it, it's really, that's the whole, the trumpet blast, you know. This is the resurrection, the call. Are they going to rise out of the tombs, or are they going to stay in the tombs? It's the whole drama that we read about in the holy books is involved in this, that they hear the name of Baha'u'llah, the simple little act that we say that we believe that a new messenger came from God and his name is Baha'u'llah. And just, they have the capacity to recognize the name if they would, we're told. But how much better if we're in a state of spiritual attraction all the time and ready to teach the faith and ready to pour it forth and have the necessary humility and qualities that make it easier for people to accept it, then rather than saying to them, you know, a new messenger has come. You think you're saved, but there's a new messenger, and if you don't recognize him, you're in trouble. You know, I mean, that kind of puts the people off before they have a chance to listen to the faith. Not that we teach it that way, but sometimes we, you know, sometimes we're filled up with the greatness of the cause, and we think this is the way to teach it. Or if somebody rejects it, then we tell them this part, you know. You're in big trouble. Yes. Maybe we'll have to pay something. I don't know. Fortunately, I haven't seen that part. But but I know that Shoghi Effendi said that the souls that go as a pilgrim again, that the souls, that many souls go to the next world not hearing about the, having heard of the faith from anyone. And he said they are not responsible. When they go to the next world, they'll have an opportunity to hear. But he said the Baha'is, they're responsible for not telling them. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we all bear responsibility, you know, to not share them.
But then they're responsible for searching out the messenger.
Yes, well, not all the souls are in that state, but some of them will, and they will find. But we meet a lot of people that really have some exposure to the faith. I mean, how about the tens of thousands that go in and out of the shrines every year, you know? Some feel something, some feel nothing. Apart from whatever the verbal message of it is, there is the presence of the cause and closeness. It's mysterious, you know, because then we say, well, how did I get into this thing? How did I become a Baha'i? Why was I privileged?
Please. Speaking about the mansion, maybe many people know that it's about a very rich man that wasn't good in his life and he died. And he had a big mansion on earth, so when he gets there, he seems to also get the mansion. And when he passes the mansion, he asks, who is that? And they say, oh, this was your servant. He was a very good servant and so on. And so he goes and suddenly there is nothing. And then he asks, what is my part? They say, well, you didn't send anything up to us to go to your mansion.
Yes, this idea, nothing sent ahead and there's nothing to construct with, that your mansion will be really built out of your deeds and your services and actions here. This is the same idea that if the seed of this thing starts growing in your heart, that gosh, I've been serving the cause a lot, but I don't know, God never gives me anything, you know, I mean, I'm able to serve, but I never seem to get ahead. I'm always having to scrape and all practically borrow money for my teaching activities. I don't know, why can't there be a little help here? And under this influence, you know, it's like wanting to cash in on your services now. But if you keep them in the bank, they will accrue a much greater value in the world to come, you know. Mr. Olinga, I remember one time he said something on a trip. We were traveling in South America. He was speaking to the friends, and I was translating. So I was witnessing all these talks, and he was telling the people. He said, now he said, did you ever hear, or could you characterize as just, any kind of an employer that called people to come and work, set them to working, told them that they should not rest for a single moment, that they should push forward with all of their capacity and all their powers to do their work, and then didn't pay them? Would that be just? Is that fair? Do you suppose God is in that condition, that He calls us and tells us, you give your everything, and then you give your life and your blood and everything, and then He's not going to give you a reward for that? He said, don't imagine. That's not the God that we all believe in. That's the just and merciful God. And just think of everything we do, you know. The rewards obviously have to come in some way or another, depending on what is our just due. But we shouldn't do it for rewards, as he says. We shouldn't do it for the rewards of this world or the next world, but simply because of the beauty of God and our love for God. And then what else are we to do? That's his pleasure, and that's our pleasure, in a sense. That the pleasure is the service. Of the Master. He says, but regarding the progress of the Spirit in the world of the kingdom after its ascension, it is wholly beyond space and time and developments. After leaving this body are spiritual and not terrestrial. It is like unto the progress of the child fetus to the world of maturity and intelligence, from the world of ignorance to the world of knowledge, from the station of imperfection to the pinnacle of perfection. As divine perfections are infinite, therefore the progress of the Spirit is limitless. The Master, writing to one of the friends, to two of the friends, a married couple, says, although we are living in the Holy Land and you are dwelling in the United States, yet the spiritual relations and the communication of the hearts are firm and steadfast, because the unity of the divine essence has bonded us together. In this material world we are cemented together, and God willing, in the universe of God, the world of the kingdom, we will be associates and intimates of each other. Again, the Master promises in a tablet, he says, verily thy Lord confirmeth the firm ones in attaining to sublime stations in his glorious kingdom. Again, in a tablet, he says, that divine bird has flown away from this mortal earthly nest, has ascended to the kingdom of God, and has been engaged in singing the sweet melodies of praise and thanksgiving on the lordly branches in the rose garden of the merciful. Again, bearing on this, he says, verily, speaking of one of the women who had passed away, he says, verily, she surrendered her life while she was in a condition wherein she was encompassed with the glad tidings of thy Lord from all directions, and her nostrils were perfumed with the fragrances of holiness from the supreme concourse. Her soul soared to the summit of sanctity, under the shelter of the mercy of thy Lord the Mighty, where the concourse of the chosen ones are assembled around it in the lofty paradise, and the angels of mercy are blessing it and are speaking its praise, while their faces are smiling because of her ascension to heaven. The Lord of the Covenant has destined for his friends eternal union to everlasting fellowship. The souls who sacrifice self become detached from the imperfections of the realm of man, and free from the bondage of this ephemeral world, Assuredly, the splendors of the rays of divine union shall shine in their hearts, and they shall find ideal relationship and happiness in the eternal paradise. Still continuing with extracts from Tablets of the Master. All the people, day and night, are working and striving and have no leisure at all. But in the end, they will be disappointed and deprived. The result of their efforts will be obliterated, and with the utmost loss and chagrin, they depart from this world and do not receive any value for this life. But on the other hand, the sons and daughters of the kingdom will ultimately become burning lights and will be shining stars in the horizon of eternal honor. Therefore, thank thou God that thou didst arrive to this station. The questioner remarked that many different opinions were held as to the conditions of the future life. Some thought that all would have exactly the same perfections and virtues, that all would be equal and alike. Abdu'l-Bahá said that there would be variety and differing degrees of attainment, as in this world. Abdu'l-Bahá, while in London, was asked, how should one look forward to death? He answered, how does one look forward to the goal of any journey? With hope and with expectation. It is even so with the end of this earthly journey. In the next world, man will find himself freed from many of the disabilities under which he now suffers. Those who have passed on through death have a sphere of their own. It is not removed from ours. Their work, the work of the kingdom, is ours, but it is sanctified from what we call time and place. Time with us is measured by the sun. When there is no more sunrise and no more sunset, that kind of time does not exist for man. Those who have ascended have different attributes from those who are still on earth, yet there is no real separation. In prayer, there is a mingling of condition. Pray for them as they pray for you. When you do not know it and are in a receptive attitude, they are able to make suggestions to you. If you are in difficulty, this sometimes happens in sleep, but there is no phenomenal intercourse. That which seems like phenomenal intercourse has another explanation. The questioner exclaimed, but I have heard a voice. Abdu'l-Bahá said, yes, this is possible. We hear voices clearly in dreams. It is not with the physical ear that you heard. The spirit of those that have passed on are freed from sense life and do not use physical means. It is not possible to put these great matters into human words. The language of man is the language of children, and man's explanation often leads astray. This is in Abdu'l-Bahá in London, pages 97 and 98. This is from Daily Lessons in Akka. The question, will the stations of the believers continue to be different hereafter? Abdu'l-Bahá answered, yes, it will be necessarily so, for the kingdom requires it. The king appoints one to be his prime minister, another to be his greatest general, another a soldier, and so on from the highest to the lowest. If all were generals or all were soldiers, there would be no kingdom. God created the mineral, the vegetable, the animal, and man. Had he created only man, there would be no world. Now, here are repeated the cables about Mrs. Maxwell and Martha Root that we had earlier. Concerning the question you have raised regarding the spiritual world beyond and our relation to it, this is a letter written on behalf of Shoghi Effendi. After death, the soul of man permanently departs from the material plane. and enters the world of the Spirit, in which it can indefinitely progress and advance. The nature of that spiritual world is essentially different and superior to our earthly life here. We should never imagine that we're going to suffer some loss of capacities or powers by going to the next world. This is some of the people thought, well, I'll be blended in with the world of spirit and they won't have any bodies. Then what will I do? But of course, we'll have a vehicle there that suits the other realms. And Baha'u'llah says he's left this proof of the dream in man's reality so that he might see that he can experience things without physically experiencing them. Because in dreams we seem to be physically experiencing things, but our body is not, our body is asleep, our eyes are closed, our ears are not listening or hearing anything, and yet we're listening to music or we're dancing or we're running or we're being chased or whatever is happening to us. And it seems very real at the time. And it has a meaning for us to show that the soul has capacity to experience independent of the perceptions of the physical senses. We have one reference here with regard to relatives of believers. This is a letter from Shoghi Effendi. He says, with reference to Baha'u'llah's tablet, in which he says that all the relatives of believers will reach the kingdom in the other world, by this is meant only partial attainment. They can, however, progress indefinitely, as spiritual progress in the other world is limitless and is not confined to those who have attained unto the knowledge and recognition of the cause while still in this world. Now that's partial answer to the question about what happens to these souls that go to the other world. There is opportunity for progress for all souls that go to the other world, and eventually, as we understand from the tablets, everyone progresses. But if you've managed to get yourself launched off in a higher orbit, naturally you're going to be seeing more things than those that just have recently gone or haven't made efforts to attain to spirituality. They would have to be educated and awakened somehow. Yes. Yes, this is this is extended even to just all the relatives of believers. How far, how many cousins away that goes, I don't know, but but apart from that, we have this special dispensation. In this revelation, Baha'u'llah has given, which Abdul Pak confirms himself, where he says that the mother and father of one that recognizes the faith are adorned with the mantle of forgiveness in the world to come. But to some degree, that's limited in the sense of it's not the same as if they had recognized the faith, but it's certainly a bounty that they will receive. Some of the parents are going to receive it with some chagrin, I think, when they have ignored hearing the faith from their children, and they find when they go to the other world that because of your daughter, because of your son, because of their services at the Baha'i World Center, now you're going to receive these special favors. You know, they say, well.
What about the covenant breakers? For example, we know that almost all manifestations, usually the family and the close relatives, there were the covenant breakers.
Mm-hmm.
Are they going to have a special?
They're going to have a special position too, I'm sure. We don't know the details of that. Maybe we shouldn't know, I don't know. Well, again, in the Kitab-i Aqdas, there's a passage in the Most Holy Book where Baha'u'llah again offers forgiveness to Yahya. Of all the people, Mirza Yahya is offered forgiveness. He says, if you but turn back to the manifestation and turn to God, you'll be forgiven. So if that's possible, the covenant breakers of all the simpler and lower grades, so to speak, will certainly have opportunities to make amends. Whether they will or not is another thing. It's the sin against the Holy Ghost that, as it says in the Bible, that there's no forgiveness for that. In other words, if the light is there and you turn this way and you refuse to turn around, then you can't progress from it. The soul has to make some movement towards the light.
Thank you.
usually Baha'is that resign from the faith, this is a question, you know. They say to themselves, they still believe in Baha'u'llah. It's the Baha'is that have driven me out of the faith, usually is their complaint. And they're not sometimes able to bear the stress of community life and so on. I don't know, it's hard to really judge the case of each of them. Some people find that they've lost belief altogether. How their condition will be is... Shoghi Effendi talks about soulmates in a letter, which we will come to that too, I think, here. That someone asked him, is there such a thing as soulmates? And he said, no, there's nothing in the teachings about soulmates. That is, we haven't been created with a perfect partner. There was this view among the Baha'is that there was another soul that you were a partner with, you know. Now, it might be your husband or your wife, but it might not. And you might meet them and then it wouldn't work out. Even if you were married, it might not work out in this world, because it was really something that was destined for that world and it would all get straightened out over there. Because then people would say, well, how do I know, you know? And do I have to search the whole world to try to find my perfect partner, you know? So he said there's no such teaching in the Course. That the connection between man and wife is similar to the spiritual connection, which will endure if it exists and if it's been developed, is similar to the spiritual connection, in fact, between believers, or between a mother and a daughter, or between brothers and sisters. If there's a close spiritual bond, that's what's going to persist in the next world. And if one doesn't or hasn't for some reason established that connection with their mate, with their spouse, then that will not be such an important relationship in the world to come. But Abdu'l Baha encourages us to try to build and forge a spiritual link as well as the physical and family links that we have here. And I think by being Baha'is and living together in marriage, there are invisible connections that take place that we don't always know are there. Sometimes when it gets tested, you realize how strong the bonds really are. Having taken them for granted, you find under stress that there are very strong bonds existing between Baha'is and marriage. Yes, this is quite acceptable. It's also stated in the writings. One can dedicate services. Now, many of the teaching campaigns are being carried on in the names of Baha'is who passed away, or of martyrs. Also, one can dedicate philanthropic acts, contributions to the fund. That's mentioned by Abdu'l Baha as a means of progress of the souls in the other world. This is secure, you know. We say, well, that sounds like something I heard about in my previous religion, but there is a reality to it. And of course, prayers assist the progress of the soul. So as we read their prayers for them, as they pray for us, as they take interest in us, our loved ones will surely be taking interest in us and praying for us. This question of the closeness, spiritual closeness between spouses, that also answers the question of, well, what shall I do now? I was married and I was very close with my wife and she died and I married again and I've had two or three marriages, you know, so what shall I do now? It isn't the same in the next world where you're in the company of the faithful and the spiritual connections are there and there's no giving and taking in marriage or bearing of children or anything of the sort. So that those closenesses would all be allowable. And if there was spirituality, I'm sure all of the spouses would get along too, so. Well, I think we certainly would know who has been, you know, our spouses and so on, and who's been our mother and who's been our brother, but the question of whether you're I don't know how marriages are in eternity, but anyway, I'm sure if you want to be close with your spouse, you'll be close with your spouse. If you are of the same level of spiritual progress, the Master does say that in another place, because like seeks like in the company of its kind. And it seems that the law of the kingdom is that the souls ascend to the level that they are comfortable with, that stage of progress in which they can accommodate themselves. If they're at a lower stage, they would not be comfortable. And if at a higher stage, also. He says, we understand our own level and the souls in the degrees below us. To some degree, we can recognize that souls are higher than us, but we don't comprehend that degree. We just simply realize that it's higher. And he stated that. Do you remember there were some things we read earlier on in the course? I don't know how many of you were here for those quotes. Sorry, Coral, you wanted to say something? Do you have a question? Yes?
Yeah, we know there are seven steps that we should take in this world to help us in the next world for making us higher in the next spiritual world. But there are two sins, as if we can call it, in this world, which is one of them is the covenant breakers, and the other one is the parents, if they can educate their children really good, they won't be forgiven by Baha'u'llah. What's that effect in the next world?
We don't know whether they will have to have some punishment, whether the punishment will, how long it will last, or what its nature will be. We know that these sufferings in the next world, we were reading, if you, I don't know if you were here for when we were reading from some answered questions about what the punishments are in this world and what they are in that world. But you can find chapters in some answered questions on that subject. And it centers basically about a realization of what the opportunities that have been lost. That all these things that God had ordained for us and we left untouched and we didn't draw them out and we didn't act on the possibilities that we had. So there's this remorse for inaction, as well as surely if we've done misdeeds as well, we have to add that on and worry about that. But God is able to heal all in the end. Whether he does right away, that's another thing we don't know about. I told some of you the story. Also, Mr. Olinga was saying that when he was at the table with the guardian, he was telling this to a group of pilgrims in Buenos Aires. Not pilgrims, I mean Baha'is in Buenos Aires, when he was visiting there. And again, he was speaking in English and I was translating into Spanish. And a lot of the friends there were from Catholic background, and some of the older ladies had really been strong in the Catholic Church. And the whole question of heaven and hell they would rather not have heard about, I think, in general. But anyway, Shoghi Effendi, it seems, was speaking to the pilgrims about Nasruddin Shah. And he said very sharply, and Mr. Olinga repeating what he heard from Shoghi Effendi said that Nasruddin Shah, when he died, went straight to hell. Well, that's pretty strong talk for Catholics, you know, when we translated this, and there was a kind of a stir in the back of the room. Some groaning and people catching their breath. My goodness. I thought we didn't believe in heaven and hell, or in hell anyway. We didn't believe in hell. And now the Shoghi Effendi said he went straight to hell. What does it mean? Well, so I translated that line, and then Mr. Olinga stopped for a moment, a kind of deep, thoughtful pause, and then he said, and Shoghi Effendi said, after that he said, and he's still there. So, when I translated that, one of the ladies in the back of the room swooned right off her chair and fell on the floor. When the whole meeting stopped, we had to go and sprinkle water on her and revive her and everything. Interesting experience. I understand this, again, pilgrim note, but back in the 30s, that there was a story that when Muhammad Ali died, the Shoghi Effendi had said that when Muhammad Ali died, he went to hell, and that Nasruddin was complaining, where shall I go now? Didn't want to be there with Muhammad, with Muhammad Ali. Apocryphal story, no doubt. But how these things are, we don't know. But again, like seeks like in the company of its kind. So polish your souls in the meanwhile. Prepare for those that are thrilled by the progress of the cause and being able to serve it in some way and to share the teachings and see another soul light up with the knowledge of God, love of God, They will surely want to hear the stories from each other and be in each other's company. Please. First, I think that we have to find the quotation to support the first part of what you're saying before we try to figure out the answer to the second part. Because as far as we know, there's a letter that was written to the guardian where it said the same thing. Someone was affirming that we understand that the soul takes 3 days before it becomes disconnected really completely from the body. And is this the reason to not cremate bodies? And he said there's no such teaching that the soul remains connected to the body in the faith, that when it's severed, it's severed. So that if in an accident, the question of sudden death seems to be that the soul would have to become aware of its changed condition. Now, if you knew you were dying, you know, or if somebody said they were going to kill you and they killed you, you're prepared. But in an accident, you're just gone like that. There's an interesting passage in this respect in Not Every Sea Hath Pearls, that Lule Matthews wrote years ago. She was a widely traveled teacher of the faith. And she had heard this story at the time that somebody had asked the master. They said that when they were in Paris, they were in France, somewhere in the interior, they had, during the war, had looked out of a window during rain, and they'd seen a car or an army vehicle of some sort there, and some soldiers changing the tire. But they first hadn't seen it, and then it appeared, and then it disappeared again. And they said, "What is this? How could I have such an experience?" And the master refers to the soldiers didn't know that they were dead yet. Whether this is, you know, how she understood it and how it was repeated. But there is this possibility. But none, they didn't see them in a physical body or connected still to their physical bodies, but in this counterpart body that is evidently the vehicle, maybe perhaps through which some of these scenes that you, like the one you recounted earlier about the Baha'i and operation seeing, you know, still seeing in this world in such a clear way. But it doesn't seem that they long remain connected to the world. And certainly, Abd al-Baha says very clearly, evil souls are not connected to this world anymore because of this question of ghosts or evil spirits being able to bother us or plague us or something. He said this is not... That's not the explanation of those troubles that we have. That these are psychic and mental problems rather than somebody outside, the devil flying around and making trouble.
But I'm wondering if there, I don't know, if there's any kind of explanation or anything in the writing that refers to this, the reason why it's suggesting, because otherwise sometimes people use that also as a saying that there is a kind of a connection, I don't know, with the place.
Yes. Well, it would be hard to be connected with the body. I mean, if we're going to bury it the same day and everything, that's another one of the requirements of the teachings, that we don't embalm the bodies, and so people will in the future will be buried quite soon after their passing, the same day if possible. But there are no explanations that say this is the reason for that. But there are some circumstances, historical circumstances, that one can think of, and then whether it applies or not is another thing. For instance, in Iran, it was the custom of families, as an honor to their dead, to transport them from Iran by animal overland to Iraq, to the place of the shrines of the imams, and to bury them there. This was a Shia. They should go somewhere near a shrine to bury the dead. And the family would have to invest all kinds of money in this long caravan, because maybe the father of the family said, when I die, I want to be buried near the Imam Ali, for example. And then off there we go, months of travel with the whole family, and then, because it wasn't buried yet, you had to go to the funeral, you had to go to the burial. And meanwhile, perhaps the soul had an illness, and it was wrapped in a bag, and who knows, it died in the summer instead of the winter. Who knows when it died? All of this thing contributed to all kinds of problems and difficulties. And there are different societies where people spend a great deal of effort moving their dead around or flying them halfway around the world. Expenses and things that, in a sense, can almost impoverish a family. So all of these things may be parts of it. We don't know what the reasons are. It's the good pleasure of God that it be buried in a place nearby where death takes place. After all, God decides the hour. And he also, this is a connection with this, where Baha'u'llah says that it's not necessary to undergo costly trips, you know, distant travel to visit the graves of your loved ones. That this is, you shouldn't feel bound or responsible to do that. Say that, you know, our parents or somebody dies on the other side of the world and we're busy serving the faith. We don't have to concern ourselves. Perhaps we'll be able to, but one shouldn't feel obligated to do that. Except in the case of visiting the shrines, in which then he's made that an obligation for the Baha'is to try to make a pilgrimage. No, but praying is mentioned, and memorial meeting is usually having prayers for them, so that would perhaps that would be the connection with memorial meetings. But we don't have, and we don't have anything about having a memorial meeting after 40 days or after so many days. There are letters that say to the contrary. We don't have that in the faith. Some places we're used to that because of the surrounding, and the Baha'is have taken up the habit of doing that, you know, having a 1 year after memorial meeting or whatever, but we don't have anything specifying that in the teaching, so it's left to the choice of the family, really concerned. Praying, contributing to the funds, or dedicating some service, such as teaching or something else. Does anyone remember any other means of assistance to the souls? I think those are the three. Okay, have a good week. We'll see you again.